distributing the future broadcast May 1st, 2006, The Maker Faire.
The future is going to be bigger than the past. There's going to be more happening. Connected systems, connected devices, connected data. What can we do in that world that will be interesting, powerful, and useful?
Changing the world through capturing the knowledge of innovators.
The future is here. It's just not evenly distributed yet.
Welcome to Distributing the Future from O'Reilly Media. I'm Daniel Steinberg, and each week we bring you the technology and the people behind what you use now and what you'll use next. Thousands of makers met up at the San Mateo Fairgrounds April 22nd and 23rd for the first ever Maker Faire. We'll talk to Make Magazine publisher Dale Doherty about the fair and hear from some of the attendees and makers that made this event so successful. Distributing the Future is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Host your next meeting online with GoToMeeting. Everyone logs on to your meeting during your conference call so they see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's like meeting in person, but less expensive and time-consuming. With GoToMeeting, you can demo products, present, or train just like you're in the same room. GoToMeeting has a low, flat monthly rate, so meet as often as you want for as long as you need. Try it free today at gotomeeting.com/DTF. That's gotomeeting.com/DTF. You'll find a ton of pictures from the Maker Faire on Flickr. You can also find video posted to the web as well. Here are some audio excerpts from Bree Pettis that he's been posting to the Make podcast stream. Bree catches up with Make Associate Editor Phil Terone on day two of the fair.
Looks like we had well over 10,000 people show up and decide that I want to learn about things to make and I want to make things myself, and worked out really well. Today we have a jam-packed day of guys with rocket belts, more Segway polo that's going on over there, tons of workshops, just pretty much everything that you could possibly do under the sun and also under the overcast here in San Mateo. So yeah, it worked out really well. We're really happy. Flickr is filled with a lot of great photos, so if you couldn't make it to the Maker Faire, then just check out the tag Maker Faire 2006 or Maker Faire, and that's Maker Faire with an E, and you know, you could vicariously live through a lot of makers. There's rockets going off right now, which is really cool, and I think they hit the hot dog stand. That's cool. So there it is, the Maker Faire.
Good morning, I'm Natalie Z, cross editor for the Make blog, and welcome to the Maker Faire.
I'm part of the Bizarre Bazaar crew. We're excited. We have 50 crafters from the Bay Area who make all kinds of techno-happy crafts and handmade stuff and independent design, which is going to be really great. T-shirts and hand-sewn things and hand-crocheted things, often with a technological bent. So we're really looking forward to it.
Hi, I'm Stuart from Microsoft Research.
And I'm Vic DeLeon from Bungie Studios. We have solar-powered beam bots, and these little guys are handmade, and we like to build them ourselves out of little parts, mainly using pager motors and solar cells, capacitors, transistors, all kinds of cool stuff.
So one thing I like is that they're very lifelike for being so simple. They're very cute toys. They only work in the sunlight. You really need to bring them outdoors to do anything interesting. I mean, stuck inside all day, very boring, being asleep. And now I brought them outside, and you can see there's a load of interest around these things.
You can see Bree's complete video on the Make site or by subscribing to their podcasts. Links are in the show notes at O'ReillyNet.com/future. Tony Stubblebein is a former O'Reilly guy and now director of engineering for Odeo. At Odeo.com, you can find podcasts as well as make and publish your own podcasts. So it was fitting that Tony was walking around the Maker Faire with a microphone in his hand asking, "Who are you and what do you do?" Here's a sampling of some of the folks that Tony talked to.
Hey, I'm John Davy, and I'm with CalCars.org. And what we're doing here at the Maker Faire, we are publicly converting a stock Toyota Prius into a plug-in Prius. CalCars, 2 years ago, converted the first Prius into a plug-in Prius. This is now the world's ninth plug-in Prius. So we're adding additional battery capacity so the car can drive in electric-only mode for a greater distance than it can stock.
So is this something that anyone could do?
Actually, the basis for this is an open source project that anyone theoretically can do with the help of an engineer, but our goal is to get automakers to do it themselves. The challenge is that we have to reverse engineer Toyota's electronics and computer systems when really they could do this themselves on the mass market and for mass production prices. In about a week's time, they could probably shift their line to do it. So we'd really rather Ford and Toyota and all the other automakers make plug-in hybrids directly.
What do you think is holding them back from doing it themselves?
They've been skittish about them, largely because at this point they think consumers don't want to plug in. And Toyota specifically have spent hundreds of millions marketing that fact. A lot of their Prius ads state you don't have to plug it in, which is it's a response to the electric vehicle craze or non-craze of the late 90s, where consumers became afraid that they would run out of fuel. So their challenge with hybrids was to point out that you don't have to plug it in, you'll never run out of fuel. The beauty of a plug-in hybrid is that you can still run electrically for most of your daily commute or all of your daily commute, but you still got that unlimited range that gasoline provides if you need to drive cross-country or 300 miles.
And is there a place for people to go for more information?
Sure, calcars.org. That's calcars.org.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Hey, I'm Dorian Porter. I'm CEO of a company called Moses, and we're here at the Maker Faire. We got this magic 8-ball that two students from Stanford built for us, which is awesome because you text message and it does it. But I got to say, every, 5 minutes or so, this, these huge flames in the air are right beside us. And so everyone's like really into our 8-ball. And then all of a sudden, all the heads turn and go, oh, my God, fire. That's cool. And they all run over to the fire.
And what is Moses?
So Moses is a service where basically you can associate content to a keyword that people can text message. And when they text message that keyword, all that content will be saved for you online. So as people are walking around the fair here, they see something they love, they see someone they like in terms of the makers, and they're like, cool, I want your plans for that. They text their maker ID, and when they get home that night, all the plans, all the web addresses, all the links are saved for them online. The nice thing about what we're doing is that, once you go onto Moses, you get your own keyword, and you can associate content. So, like, for me, I use, Dorian, D-O-R-R-I-A-N. You text that to Moses, to our short code, and you save information about me. So, people can use it in their personal lives, and we want to see that happen. But we also see the ability for, companies and fairs and whatnot to use it to kind of make their events better. I actually just had a guy who is involved with the Love Parade, and they're like, we got to use this at the Love Parade. People want to know what artists are up on stage. They want to know more about the music. They want to be able to download an MP3. And that's what Moses is, trying to do. It's going to focus on connecting people with each other and things they love and music and, stuff like the Make Fair is exactly what we're going after.
Well, my name's Todd Harrison and my daughter, Veronica Harrison. We're showing off the Redneck Pool Heater, which is a 180 feet of copper pipe that we keep it. We put in our grill to heat our in-ground pool. We have an 8,000 gallon pool that's too cold in the winter to swim in. So what we do is my daughter Veronica and I built this Redneck pool heater so that we could heat our pool to, well, we thought we'd only heat it to just swimming temperature, but we actually heat it to 92 degrees whenever we want. Takes about, 2 days and I would say about three and a half tanks of propane in 2 days to heat the pool to 89.4. Another extra tank of propane and we can get it to 92.
Veronica, is this your first foray into redneck hardware hackery?
Yeah, usually I do more things along like robots and wiring. That's more my thing. So I don't really do redneck things.
So how did you get into more mainstream hacking?
A long time ago, my dad just gave me a little electronics kit. And I soldered the joints, the electronics onto it, and then you click the button and dice rolling game. It's really fun.
And do you have any advice for people getting started in this sort of these sort of activities? Was it hard or was it just a lot of fun and it came naturally?
Well, my dad did most of the work, so it wasn't that hard for me. If you want to get involved in this stuff, you go to Radio Shack or go online and look for something where you do stuff with your hands or take a class on the internet or something.
Awesome.
Tony Stubblebine, Director of Engineering for Odeo. You can also find in the show notes links to the full versions of these audio interviews from the Maker Faire. Make, the magazine, and the larger concept is the brainchild of Dale Doherty. Dale talked to us over the phone about where the idea for the Maker Faire came from, how he thought the weekend went, and what's next. In a way, he explains, without consciously meaning to, the Maker Faire is a bit of a new take on the county fair. Instead of showing off the crops and the livestock you've been working on, people at the Maker Faire showed off other types of creative projects they've been involved in over the past months or years. Dale explains,
ever since I came up with the idea for Make, we weren't trying to create makers, in a sense, as discovering them. And there were lots of makers out there, but they were kind of pigeonholed into different categories. You know, there were people that did rockets, there were people that did robots, there were people that did steam-powered this or that, you know, and more broadly you could think of just hobbyists in general doing different things, but they weren't necessarily seeing the connections to each other. And if you almost look at it from a sort of open source point of view, you know, open source software is a project-oriented phenomenon. You know, people get together and they work on projects. And the whole goal of open source from its beginning was to try to give a name to all those projects, not just the, you know, mobile projects or the Perl projects or the PHP. You know, those communities tended to define themselves that way, but open source gave them a term to put them all together. And I think Make has done that for tinkers and hobbyists and all kinds of people who do things who now say, you know, I'm a maker, and they use that as a term to connect to other people. So my vision from the beginning was if I somehow got all these people, you know, in the same room or under the same tent, they would really enjoy talking to each other. They would ask good questions of each other. And they would have a good conversation. And, of course, we did smaller versions of these events at some of the O'Reilly conferences, and they were very successful. We did, you know, for a couple hundred people. And just taking, you know, the simplest idea was to invite a maker to spread out his project, the materials and the components, on a table and just talk to people. And we couldn't get people away from them. At the end of the night, I kept flicking on the lights to say, go home, go home. You know, it was just such a good conversation, and people were very, on both sides of the table were stimulated by it. What impressed me about Maker Faire was the high level of engagement from the attendees. I mean, and this is everything from 6-year-old kids to 60-year-old people. You know, they were really fascinated and interested in what was happening. How that translates into what you do and how you see the world, it's a little bit hard to explain. I don't think it necessarily means they go home and build a project. Perhaps it, even better, they see something that they're already doing as connecting into the maker mindset, something that they thought was just a weird little thing they do on their free time suddenly becomes a project and something that identifies them to other people in a way that perhaps before they were a little bit shy about. Really the greatest pleasure was just to see the smiles on the faces of kids building a rocket going off into the parking lot, shooting it off, doing stop frame animation, making sort of the claymation, you know, starting with clay, making figures, posing the figures, taking pictures of it each step of the way, and creating their own little animation. We had all kinds of activities for kids, and you know, I think there's two things that matter here. One is there's a lot of places that have activities for kids, and that's obviously a good thing to engage kids with a hands-on experience. They don't get enough of that as a way of learning, as a way of engaging in science and technology. But they were also seeing other adults as engaged and curious and interested as they are. You know, to see a 45-year-old man behind a table talking about, you know, a little robot that crawls along the ground and see his eyes sparkle and the way that those little kids sparkle, they, you know, that really means quite a bit. You know, we have lots of good science museums and art museums around the world, but, you know, we tend to just see the object on the wall or the object on the pedestal. We don't see the person who creates it, whose idea it was. And it was, I think it's a thrill to be able to talk to someone who makes something. You know, we have one science museum that's contacted us. You know, that's really, once I got over the physical exhaustion of the fair, that's where my mind has turned to say, well, what's the model for replicating this around the world and keeping its heart and soul at the same time. One hand, I have to say the Bay Area is unique in the amount of you know, makers that have a lot of experience, even, you know, exhibiting and performing. But I think the heart of the event is to recruit local makers. That there are makers in every community, and, you know, you have to go out and look for them. The magazine, obviously, is kind of like the ambassador for the fair. It goes out and makes these connections, and without the magazine, we would not have had the connections or the goodwill of other people who just knew exactly what we were talking about and wanted to participate. I did not have to work too hard to get people to exhibit here. Make and Maker Faire are ways of transforming science and technology learning, but not just for kids. I think what we're seeing there is it's really important that adults be as engaged as the kids. And I think we sparked everybody's imagination. You'd see the parents and the kids. We had this thing called Make Play Day, where we worked with the Alameda County Recycling Center to bring a bunch of laptops, old equipment that they could take apart. We brought a bunch of tools, a bunch of materials and supplies, and it was wide open. They could just make whatever they want. We had some motors there and had Michael Shilo create some patterns. You know, you're familiar with the term from computers. Just, you know, if you want to see, you know, here's a certain pattern of how you make something move and how you connect a motor up to an axle or something like that. You know, he'd work with the kids to give them some ideas, but it was a free-form making session, and kids walked away with something they made. And it wasn't necessarily kids working on their own. They were working in groups. I saw three boys working in line, working on the same, you know, same project. And I saw these two brothers come out, one, Max and Alex. Max built a robot, and Alex, his younger brother, built the control module for the robot. And they told me, this tells the robot what to do. And it was so cute. And it was all in their imagination, of course. You know, they were taking things like rollerblade wheels and gluing it to the screen of an old laptop, and they had springs for legs. And, you know, just to hear them talk about it, you could just see the wheels in their mind at work. And I think that's what is the goal of certainly any, you know, magazine or event. But more importantly, I think, of education, you have to, you know, engage people and get them invested in doing things themselves. It was hard work. I think many of them, we had an event Saturday night, try to, you know, serve dinner and have a band and have a fire show, and many of the makers had to go home. They were just beat. It's hard work, you know, interacting with people at this level for a full day, let alone 2 days. But all of them, you know, just it's the kind of thing that makes you glad to be alive. You know, in a funny way, I think we reinvented the county fair, or the state fair, or whatever those things. You know, they were originally built on an agrarian model, agrarian society, that you know, you brought your livestock, you brought your vegetables, you brought your cakes and pies to the fair, and you showed them to your neighbors and friends, and it really was, here's what I've made. But you know, they haven't really updated that county fair in quite a while, and people don't so much have livestock today, but they do have science and technology projects, or they have art and craft projects, and I think that was the core of the event, was people bringing things to the fair and having all around it a kind of, you know, fun, entertaining milieu that everybody had a good time. But the core of it is really the creativity of people and what they like to make. And again, our society tends to put science in one corner, art in another corner, craft in one corner, opposing those two, and engineering yet, you know, in another. And Maker Faire brought all of those, you know, four elements together in a very powerful way, and it was exciting. Because I think just as we talk about mixing and mashups, you know, in terms of music and culture, you know, creativity happens because people borrow an idea from one, you know, one area, and they mix it up with an idea in another area. So I think it's really exciting as we think about a craft magazine next to Make, that we'll see a lot of cross-fertilization there between projects and new forms of creativity coming out of that.
Dale Doherty on the origins and future of the Maker Faire. Thanks also to Tony Stubblebine and Bree Pettis. Distributing the Future is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Online meetings made easy. Try it free at gotomeeting.com/DTF. Thanks to all of you who've emailed in your comments, criticisms, and suggestions. If you have ideas to share with us, send email to future@O'Reilly.com. I'm Daniel Steinberg. Distributing the Future is a production of O'Reilly Media. Special thanks to David Bettino for composing and performing this theme. Visit David at Batmosphere.com. This program was produced on Mac OS X Tiger using Soundtrack Pro, Bias Peak, and Audio Hijack Pro.